Hare Krishna. Thanks you for inviting me to come lead the discussion today. Since there's just a few of us, we don't have to be too formal. I have some different things I want to read from. Today is Gopastami. That's why Radharani is dressed like a cowherd boy, if you're wondering about that. We'll talk a little bit about that today. We're going to talk about Kartik in general, some of the different festivals and different... the whole idea of it. But anyone have any, since there's just a few of us, questions, comments, anything for discussion, anything to share? Sunny? Did everyone do their Gita chapter today? I thought maybe we could do the 9th chapter together. That's somewhat related to what we're discussing today. So the 9th chapter is called The Most Confidential Knowledge. The most confidential knowledge is actually about Krishna's devotees. That's the actual, of course Krishna does reveal direct knowledge about himself, but that's on page 395. There's quite a large section of this 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is Krishna's discussing his relationship with his devotees in it. So we'll look a little bit at that. We'll chant the Sanskrit together. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam te tu guhyatamam pravakshasyam yanasuyave jnanam vijnanam sahitam yajyatva mokshashe shuvat raja vidya raja guhyam pavitram idam utamam pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukam kartum avyayam. Asradhadhana purusha dharmasyasya parantaba aprapyamani vartante mrityu samsara vartmani mayatam idam sarvam jagad avyakta murtina matsthani sarva bhutani nachaham teshavastita nacha matsthani bhutani pasyame yogam aishwaram bhuta brinnacha bhutastho mamatma bhuta bhavana yathakashostito nityam vayu sarvatra gomahan tata sarvani bhutani matstanityupadharaya sarvabhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpashaye punastani kalpado visrajamyaham prakritim samavastavya visrajami punapuna bhutagramam imam krishnam avasham prakatirvashat nacha mam tani karmani nibadnanti jinanjaya udhasina vadasinam asaktam teshu karmasu mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kaunteya jagad viparivartate avajananti mamuddha manushim tanumashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram moghasha mogha karmano mogha jnana vichetasa rakshashim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shita mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam satatam kirtayanto mam yattantascha judavadaha namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasade jnana yajnena chapyanye yajanto mam upasate ekatvena prakatvena bahuda vishvato mukam aham kratur aham yajna swadaham aham aushadam Mantroham Mahamevajam, Aham Agniraham Hutam, Gatir Bharta Prabhu Sakshi, Nivasa Shadanam Suhrit, Prabhava Pralayastanam. Did I skip one? Sorry. Pitaham. Pitaham asya jagato mata dhata pitamaha vedyam pavitram omkara riksama yajure vacha gatir bharta prabhu sakshi nivasa sharanam suhrit prabhava pralayastanam nidhanam bijamavyayam tapamyaham aham varsham nigranam yutsrajami अमृतम चैव मृत्युश्च सत् असक्चाहम् अर्जुन त्रैविद्य माम सोम पापूत पाप यज्ञार्ष्वसार्गतिं प्रार्थयन्ते ते पुण्यमासद्य सुरेन्द्रलोकम् आश्नन्ति दिव्यान् दिविदेवभोगान् तेथं भुङ्क्व स्वर्गलोकं विशालं शिने पुण्ये मर्त्यलोकं विशन्ति एवं च ई धर्मम् अनुप्रपन्ना गतागतं काम काम लभन्ते अनन्यश्चिन्तयन्तो मां ये जना पर्युपासते तेषां नित्याभियुक्तानं योगक्षेमं वहाम्यहम् येऽप्यन्यदेवता भक्ता यजन्ते श्रदयान्विता तेऽपि मामेव कौन्तेय यजन्ति अविद्धिपूर्वकम् अहं सर्वयज्ञानं भोक्ता च प्रभुरेव च न तु मम अभिजानन्ति तद्वेनातश्चवन्ति ते यान्ति देवव्रता देवान् पितृन्यान्ति पितृव्रता भूतानि यान्ति भूतेजा यान्ति मध्याजिनोऽपि मां पत्रं पुष्पं फलं तोयं यो मे भक्त्या प्रयच्छति तदहं भक्त्युपाहृतम् अश्नामि प्रयतात्मनः यत्करोषि यदश्नासि यज्जहोऽसि ददासि यत् यत्तपस्यासि कौन्थेय तत्कुरुष्व मदर्पणम् शुभाशुभाफलमेवं मोक्षसे कर्मबन्धने संन्यासयोगयुक्तात्मा विमुक्तो मामुपैष्यसि समोऽहं सर्वभूतेषु न मे द्वेष्योऽस्ति न प्रिया ये भजन्ति तु मां भक्त्या मयि तेषु चाप्यहम् अपि चेत् शूद्राचारो भजते मामनन्यवाक् सारुरेव समन्तव्य सम्यग्व्यवसितो हि सः क्षिप्रं भवति धर्मात्मा शश्वक्षन्तिं निगच्छति कौन्तेय प्रतिजानीहि न मे भक्ता प्रणश्यति मां हि भर्तव्यपाश्रित्या येऽपि स्युपापयोनया श्रियो वैशस्तदा शूद्रस्तेऽपि यान्ति परं गतिं किं पुनर्ब्रह्मणा पुण्या भक्तराजर्षयस्तथा अनित्यम् असुखं लोकम् इमं प्राप्य भजस्व मम् मन्मना भव मद्भक्तो मध्याजिमं नमस्कुरु मामे वैश्यसि युक्त्वा एवम् आत्मानं मत्परायणाम् हरिः ॐ तत्सत् इति श्रीमद्भगवद्गीतासुभानिषत्सु ब्रह्मविद्यायां योगशास्त्रे श्रीकृष्ण अर्जुनसंवादे राजविद्यराजगुह्य नाम नवमोऽध्यायः हरिः ॐ So we'll read through the translations. We can do maybe five at a time. And just what we're going to be talking about is Krishna's relationship with his devotees today, especially. So keep in mind as we're reading through these verses. Krishna, of course, he declares right at the very beginning, this is called the most confidential knowledge, he tells Arjuna that he's going to impart the most confidential knowledge. In the beginning of the chapter, he does describe his own nature. As you know, he very clearly states that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a number of different ways. And then he, even beyond stating that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he goes out of his way to make sure that it's clear, like there's nothing, you know, he gets into a little later, like a humkat or a hum yagya. He's saying like, I'm what's offered into the sacrifice. I'm the sacrificial offering. There's nothing outside of me. Anything that is, you know, I'm the essence of the Vedas. I'm the Vedic rituals. I'm everything. I'm the goal of it. There's nothing, you know, beyond that. But he also spends a lot of time talking about devotional service. That's even more confidential than Krishna, is devotional service to Krishna, or and the particular nature of that devotional service. So what spiritual knowledge consists of, in the very beginning, understanding that we're the spirit soul, not these bodies, that is in of itself very confidential knowledge. How many people have any conception that they're not the physical body, that there's something else? Very rare, but you actually do meet a lot of people who have some idea that they're not the physical body. I mean, it's rare. Most people are, and of course, if you include animals especially, animals are fully under the conception that they're the body. Most living entities in the material world, let's speak of human beings, but also most human beings, but still there's many people who have some idea that there's something. Then beyond that, there's people who have some idea of God. But in the beginning, it's a very vague idea of God, what we would call Brahman, that, yes, there's some spiritual reality that underlies everything, some spiritual reality that connects and unifies everything. And beyond that is the idea that we are also part of God, and that there's actually a person, God, and we have a relationship with God. But the relationship is not exactly clear. Yes, there's a relationship, but it's not explicitly a relationship of exclusive love and devotion. It's gradually, pure devotional service is, we're moving towards it, but it's blurry still. What does it exactly mean that we have a relationship to God, and he's in our heart, and we know we have some intimate relationship? Then comes the understanding of that God is a person. We actually have a relationship with God. This is really the most confidential knowledge, that we have a relationship with God. And he's a person. Like, God is a person. How many people know that? You know, you ask so many people if they believe in God. Many people will say yes, if you did a survey, but 9 out of 10, if you ask, is God a person? They'll say, probably not. They can't conceive how that's possible. But even more confidential than that is specific knowledge of our relationship with God. What does that mean? And our relationship with God as a person also develops through different stages. It's a very confidential mystery, devotional service. In the beginning, the first stage is neutrality, shantaras. The second stage is, so in a stage of shantaras, or someone who's awakened their relationship to God in that level, there's a feeling of complete detachment from everything material and complete attachment to God, but the relationship is not fully based on service yet. So gradually, the service becomes more intimate through dasyaras, through servitorship, through friendship, through parental love, and ultimately through conjugal love, and ultimately the relationship of the Lord to his devotees in Vrindavan is the most confidential of all confidential of all confidential mysteries. So Krishna talks a little bit about his confidential nature with his devotees in this chapter, and we'll, as we can read the translations, we'll try and see where that's coming out, and then we'll discuss that further. You want to start?
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjun, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. This knowledge is the king of education the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation.
Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will, it is annihilated at the end. O Dana Jaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever attached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction. O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings, under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Fools deride me, and when I descend in the human form, they do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be.
Those who are as bewildered and attracted to the demonic and ascetic view, in that deluded condition, their hopes are liberation, their fruitive activities and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. O son of Partha, those who are not deluded, the great soul, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in the devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, origin and inexhaustible. Always chanting my glorious enduring with great determination, bowing down before me, this great soul perpetually worship me with the devotion. Others who engage in sacrifice by cultivating of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without the second, a diverse in many and the universe form.
But it is I who am the ritual. I am the sacrifice, the offering of ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support and the grandsire. I am the object of the knowledge, the purifier and the syllable Om. I am also the Rig, the Sam and the Yajurvedas.
I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place and the eternal seed. O Arjun, I give heat and I withhold this withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights.
When they have thus enjoyed various heavenly sense pleasure and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principle of three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghost and spirit will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me.
If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I'll accept it. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. In this way, you will be freed from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him.
Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in this determination. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace, O son of Kunti. Declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. O son of Partha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, and Sudras can attain the supreme destination. How much more this is so of the righteous Brahmins, the devotees, and the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary miserable world, engage in loving service unto me. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me.
So Krishna is giving us a little glimpse into his relationship with his devotees here and into the nature of devotional service. He talks a little bit about the beginning of the chapter about those who don't surrender unto him, talks about those who do. And simply, just Krishna says, if you just offer me a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, that's all you have to do. Whatever you eat, whatever you offer, just offer that to me. And then Krishna says, if you do that, I become so indebted to my devotee who does that, who offers that to me. Someone who executes devotional service, Krishna says, they're so dear to me. He says, not only will you be freed of all sinful reactions and you'll be liberated and come to me, but you'll become so dear to me. Krishna says, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I envy no one. This is a famous verse in text 29, Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu. Name dvesyosti na priya. He says that I'm equal to everyone. I don't envy anyone and no one is dear to me. But ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya, those who worship me in devotion, Maite teshu chapyaham. Krishna says, that person is in me, and I am in them. Maite means they're in me. You go into the heart of Krishna. Krishna is saying that if you perform devotional service. And then he ends this section of devotional service saying, even if my devotee, has difficulty on the path of devotional service, even if he's engaged in some abominable action, he's still to be considered saintly. That's the power of Krishna in this end section is glorifying how powerful devotional service is. He says, it doesn't matter. This is not like the Vedic process where you have to become, in the Vedic conception, you could only become liberated if you were born in a Brahmin family and if you took sannyas. But Krishna says, it doesn't matter what family you're born in, if you're a man or a woman or if you're Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, anyone, just perform devotional service. Engage your mind in thinking of me. Offer obeisances to me, and surely you'll come to me. So this is the mystery of devotional service, how we have a personal relationship with God and how we can reestablish that relationship. Very great secret. So I want to read something from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the story of Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa Muni. And this illustrates a little bit this verse where Krishna says, "Mai te te shuchapyaham," that my devotees are in me and I am in them. This illustrates a little bit about what that actually means. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're saying there's these different levels of spiritual knowledge, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is, throughout its 12 cantos, its many thousands of verses, is dedicated to revealing exactly what that means, what this confidential knowledge is, by means of so many different stories. And actually, ultimately, the most confidential knowledge is Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and his relationships with the residents there, especially the gopis. But it takes some time for us to actually be able to understand what that is, so we have many different stories. But this is at the beginning of the ninth canto. We've covered a lot of ground already, so we're sort of jumping ahead. By the time we get here, we've covered many things, but Krishna is beginning to illustrate here. He's been doing that throughout, but this is sort of like a prelude to the 10th canto, how dear Krishna's devotees are to him. So we're reading from the 4th chapter of the 9th canto. It's called Ambarish Maharaj Offended by Durvasa Muni. So Sukadev Goswami is narrating to Maharaj Parikshit here, and he says, "Maharaja Ambarish, the most fortunate personality, achieved the rule of the entire world, consisting of 7 islands, and achieved inexhaustible, unlimited opulence and prosperity on earth. Although such a position is rarely obtained, Maharaj Ambarisha did not care for it at all, for he knew very well that all such opulence is material, like that which is imagined in a dream. Such opulence will ultimately be destroyed. The king knew that any non-devotee who attains such opulence merges increasingly into material nature's mode of darkness." Maharaj Ambarish was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, and of the saintly persons who are the Lord's devotees. Because of this devotion, he thought of the entire universe as being insignificant as a piece of stone. These are very famous verses here, describing how Maharaj Ambarish engaged himself practically. How, you know, he was the king of the world at the time, but he was completely indifferent to his kingly offerings. Although he performed his duty very carefully, he was, what was he actually? Where was his consciousness? These very beautiful verses describe. Savai mana Krishna padada vindayo vacham sivai kunda gunanuvarnane karau hare mandira marjanadishu Shutim chakara chita satkatodaye Mukundalingaya darshane drishau Tadbritta gatra sparshanga sangamam Granam chitat pada saroja saurabe Shrimat tulasyara sanam tadarpita Padau hade shecha padanu sarpane Shirodi shikesha padabhi vandane Kamam jadasye natu kama kamyaya yutotama shloka janashayadati. Maharaj Ambarish always engaged his mind in meditating upon the lotus feet of Krishna. Savai mana Krishna parada vindayo. His words in describing the glories of the Lord, vachamsi vaikunta gunanu varnane. His hands in cleansing the Lord's temple, karau hare mandira marjanadishu, and his ears in hearing the words spoken by Lord Krishna or about Krishna, shutim chakara chuta satkatodaye. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna, Krishna's temples and Krishna's places like Mathura and Vrindavan, mukundalingaya darshanejasa. He engaged his sense of touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees, tadbritta gatra sparshanga sangamam. He engaged his sense of smell in smelling the fragrance of the tulasi offered to the Lord, granam chatat pada saroja saurabe. And he engaged his tongue in tasting the Lord's prasada. He engaged his legs in walking to the holy places and temples of the Lord, padau hade shecha padabhi sarpane. His head in bowing down before the Lord, Shiro Hrishikesha Paravivandane. In all his desires, in serving the Lord 24 hours a day, Kamam Jadase Nitukama Kamya. Maharaj Ambarish never desired anything for his own sense gratification. He engaged all his senses in devotional service and various engagements related to the Lord. This is the way to increase attachment for the Lord and to completely free from all material desires. In performing his prescribed duties as king, Maharaj Ambarish always offered the results of his royal activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is the enjoyer of everything and is beyond the perception of material senses. He certainly took advice from the Brahmanas, who were faithful devotees of the Lord, and thus he ruled the planet Earth without difficulty. So along with performing the specific activities of devotional service, he also performed his so-called material duties, but he offered them all to Krishna, and therefore they were equally just as much pure devotional service. In desert countries where there flowed the river Saraswati, Maharaj Ambarish performed great sacrifices, like the Ashwamedha Yajna, and thus satisfied the master of all yajnas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such sacrifices were performed with great opulence and suitable paraphernalia, and with contributions of dakshina to the brahmanas, who were supervised by great personalities like Vasishta, Asita, and Gautama, representing the king, the performer of sacrifices. In the sacrifice arranged by Maharaja Ambarisha, the members of the assembly and the priests were gorgeously dressed, and they all looked exactly like demigods. They eagerly saw to the proper performance of the yajna. The citizens of the state of Maharaj Ambarisha were accustomed to chanting and hearing about the glorious activities of the Personality of Godhead. Thus they never aspired to be elevated to the heavenly planets, which are extremely dear even to the demigods. Those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness of rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics, for such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within his heart. The king of this planet, Maharaj Ambarisha, thus performed devotional service to the Lord, and in this endeavor practiced severe austerity, always satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his constitutional activities. He gradually gave up all material desires. Maharaj Ambarisha gave up all attachment to household affairs, wives, children, friends and relatives, to the best of powerful elephants, to beautiful chariots, carts, horses, and inexhaustible jewels, and to ornaments, garments, and inexhaustible treasury. He gave up attachment to all of them, regarding them as temporary or material. Being very pleased by the unalloyed devotion of Maharaj Ambarisha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave the king his disc, which is fearful to enemies, which always protects the devotee from enemies and adversities. To worship Lord Krishna, Maharaja Ambarisha, along with his queen, who is equally qualified, observed the vow of Ekadashi and Dwadashi for 1 year. In the month of Kartika, after observing that vow for 1 year, after observing a fast for 3 nights, and after bathing in the Jamuna, Maharaj Ambarisha worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, in Madhuvan. Following the regulative principles of Mahabhisheka, Maharaj Ambarisha performed the bathing ceremony for the deity of the Lord of Lord Krishna with all paraphernalia. And then he dressed the deity with fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant flower garlands, and other paraphernalia for the worship of the Lord. With attention and devotion, he worshipped Krishna and all the greatly fortunate brahmanas who are free from material desires. Thereafter, Maharaj Ambarisha satisfied all the guests who arrived at his house, especially the brahmanas. He gave in charity 60 crores of cows, whose horns were covered with gold plate and whose hooves were covered with silver plate. All the cows were well decorated with garments and had full milk bags. They were mild-natured, young and beautiful, and were accompanied by their calves. After giving these cows, the king first sumptuously fed all the brahmanas, and when they were fully satisfied, he was about to break fast. Exactly at that time, however, Durvasa Muni, the great and powerful mystic, appeared on the scene as an uninvited guest, as he often does, and he also is famous for having a temper. After standing up to receive Durvasa Muni, King Ambarisha offered him a seat and paraphernalia of worship. Then, sitting at his feet, the king requested the great sage to eat. Durvasa Muni gladly accepted the request of Maharaj Ambarisha, but to perform the regulative ritualistic ceremonies, he went to the river Jamuna. There he dipped into the water of the auspicious Jamuna and meditated on the impersonal Brahman. In the meantime, only a muhurta of the Dwadashi day was left on which to break the fast. Consequently, it was imperative that the fast be broken immediately. In this dangerous situation, the king consulted learned brahmanas. So now the king is in difficulty because you're, of course, according to Vedic rules, you're not supposed to eat before your guest. But he also has been observing this vrata, and he's supposed to break the fast at a certain time. And the time is fast approaching. The king said, "To transgress the laws of respectful behavior towards the brahmanas is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of the Dwadashi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O brahmanas, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water." In this way, after consulting with the brahmanas, the king reached this decision. For according to Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not as eating. O best of the Kuru dynasty, after he drank some water, King Ambarisha, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, waited for the return of the great mystic, Durvasa Muni. After executing the ritualistic ceremonies to be performed at noon, Durvasa returned from the bank of the Jamuna. The king received him well, offering all respects. But Durvasa Muni, by his mystic power, could understand that King Ambarisha had drunk water without his permission. Still hungry, Durvasa Muni, his body trembling, his face curved and his eyebrows crooked in a frown, angrily spoke as follows to King Ambarish, who stood before him with folded hands. "Alas! Just see the behavior of this cruel man. He is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Being proud of his material opulence and his position, he considers himself God. Just see how he has transgressed the laws of religion. Maharaj Ambarisha, you have invited me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you." As Durvasa Muni said this, his face became red with anger. Uprooting a bunch of hair from his head, he created a demon resembling the blazing fire of devastation to punish Maharaj Ambarisha. Taking a trident in his hand and making the surface of the earth tremble with his footsteps, that blazing creature came before Maharaj Ambarisha. But the king, upon seeing him, was not at all disturbed and did not move even slightly from his position. As a fire in the forest immediately burns to ashes an angry snake, so, by the previous order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his disc, Sudarshana Chakra, immediately burnt to ashes the created demon to protect the Lord's devotee. Upon seeing that his own attempt had failed and that the Sudarshana Chakra was moving towards him, Durvasa Muni became very frightened and began to run in all directions to save his life. As the blazing flames of a forest fire pursue a snake, the disc of the Supreme Personality of Godhead began following Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni saw that the disc was almost touching his back, and thus he ran very swiftly, desiring to enter a cave of the Sumeru mountain. Just to protect himself, Durvasa Muni fled everywhere in all directions, in the sky, on the surface of the earth, in caves, in the ocean, on different planets of the rulers of the three worlds, and even on the heavenly planets. But wherever he went, he immediately saw, following him, the unbearable fire of the Sudarshan Chakra. With a fearful heart, Durvasa Muni went here and there seeking shelter. But when he could find no shelter, he finally approached Lord Brahma and said, "O my Lord, O Lord Brahma, kindly protect me from the blazing Sudarshana Chakra sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Lord Brahma said, "At the end of the Dwi Parardha, when the pastimes of the Lord come to an end, Lord Vishnu, by a flick of his eyebrows, vanquishes the entire universe, including our planets of residence. Such personalities as me and Lord Shiva, as well as Daksha, Bhrigu, and similar great saints of which they are the head, and also the rulers of living entities, the rulers of human society, and the rulers of the demigods, all of us surrender unto that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, bowing our heads to carry out his orders for the benefit of all living entities." When Durvasa, who was greatly afflicted by the blazing fire of the Sudarshana Chakra, was thus refused by Lord Brahma, he tried to take shelter of Lord Shiva, who always resides on his planet, known as Kailasha. Lord Shiva said, "My dear son, I, Lord Brahma, and the other demigods who rotate within this universe under the misconception of our greatness, cannot exhibit any power to compete with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For innumerable universes and their inhabitants come into existence and are annihilated by the simple direction of the Lord. Past, present, and future are known to me, Lord Shiva, Sanat Kumara, Narada, and the most revered Lord Brahma, Kapila, Apantaratma, Devala, Yamaraj, Asuri, Marichi, and many saintly persons headed by him, as well as many others who have achieved perfection. Nonetheless, because we are covered by the illusory energy of the Lord, we cannot understand how expansive that illusory energy is. You should simply approach that Supreme Personality of Godhead to get relief, for this Sudarshan Chakra is intolerable even to us. Go to Lord Vishnu. He will certainly be kind enough to bestow all good fortune upon you." Durvasa Muni, the great mystic, scorched by the heat of the Sudarshan Chakra, fell at the lotus feet of Narayana. His body trembling, he spoke as follows: "O infallible, unlimited Lord, protector of the universe, you are the only desirable object for all devotees. I am a great offender, my Lord. Please give me protection. O my Lord, O Supreme Controller, without knowledge of your unlimited prowess, I have offended your most dear devotee. Very kindly save me from the action of this offense. You can do everything, for even if a person is fit for going to hell, you can deliver him simply by awakening within his heart the holy name of your Lordship." So how does Lord Narayan respond to this plea of Durvasa? He has to go to the king and ask his forgiveness. Why does he have to go to the king? Why can't Lord Narayan just forgive him? He's God, he can do anything, right? Yes. So what Krishna essentially says to him is that, "I can't forgive you. I have no power to forgive you. Even though I'm God, I have no power to forgive you." Because Krishna's tells, as we hear, and we'll hear in a minute, that he's completely under the control of his devotees. So we'll look at these very beautiful verses where Lord Narayan responds to Durvasa Muni. There's 5 verses, 4 or 6 verses. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Aham Bhakta Paradhino Yasvatandra Iva Dvija Sarubir Grashta Hridayo Bhaktar Bhakta Jana Priyaha. Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the Brahmana, "I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotees are very dear to me. So Krishna says here, Aham bhakta paradinaha. Paradina means like a servant or someone who's a dependent, like a servant or a child. Like this young child, he's completely dependent on his parents for care. He has no independent existence. He's completely dependent. So in the same way, Krishna says that I am dependent. I'm on my devotees. I'm bhakta paradina. I'm like the dependent of my devotees. He says, he aswatantra eva dvija. The dvija means O Brahmana. This swatantra means independent, or sometimes the word is swarat also. Swa means oneself, like swarupa means one's own form. So the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva is giving his introduction to the Bhagavatam. It says, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadyasya Yaton Vayad Itarash Charteshu Abhigyaswarat. He says, I offer my respects to Vasudeva, the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead. Janmadi Asya Yataha. He is the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction of the entire universe. Shishiradha Madan Mohan Ki. Janmadi Asya Yataha. Janmad Yasya Tonvayad. Itadas Charteshu Abhigya. He's directly and indirectly cognizant of everything. And he's Swarat. He's completely independent. So this is the beginning of knowledge of God, that he's completely independent. He's the source of everything. The confidential knowledge of God is that he's actually completely dependent. So at the very beginning of Bhagavatam, we hear that God is completely independent. And here God himself is saying, he asvatantra eva duja. And he means certainly, and eva also means certainly. These are modifying. So he's saying, I'm certainly, completely, absolutely dependent on my devotees. He says, sadubir grasta hridayo. Grasta means controlled or like caught hold of. He says, the sadhus, they control my heart. They're literally holding my heart. Not just my devotees, but even anyone who's dear to my devotees. I'm under their control. So in the next verse, Supreme Lord continues his reply. Naham atmanam ashase madbhaktai sadhubir vina shriyam chatyantikam brahman yesham gatir aham para. O best of the brahmanas, without saintly persons for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. So this is Krishna saying here that even though he's God and he owns everything, it's his relationships with his devotees that are important to him. And we see the reflection of that nature in ourselves, that as Vaisheshika Prabhu sometimes says, if I said you can live on an island and you can have anything you want, but there's no one else there. You can have whatever you want in the island, but no other living thing. No one will want to live in that existence. We have that nature to reciprocate love, and Krishna also has that nature to reciprocate love with his devotees. He says, all my opulences are of no use to me without my devotees. We'll read little Srila Prabhupada's purport. A Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, but to enjoy his transcendental bliss, he requires the cooperation of his devotees. So this is the paradox of he actually does require the cooperation of his devotees, and he actually does become under the control of his devotees. It's not like he's just pretending, like he's actually God, and no, he actually does. In Vrindavan, for example, although Lord Krishna is full in himself, he wants the cooperation of his devotees, like the cowherd boys and the gopis, to increase his transcendental bliss. Such pure devotees who can increase the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly most dear to him. Not only does the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoy the company of his devotees, but because he is unlimited, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. Thus he descends to the material world to induce the non-devotees and the rebellious living entities to return home back to Godhead. He requests them to surrender unto him, because, unlimited as he is, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. And here is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement stated. The Krishna consciousness movement is an attempt to increase the number of pure devotees of the Supreme Lord more and more. So this is actually, when we're sharing Krishna consciousness, this is actually what we should be thinking when we're going out to distribute books. This is the meditation we should try and have, and the consciousness we should try and cultivate, that we're actually doing this for Krishna's pleasure, because Krishna actually has a relationship with this person. Krishna wants a relationship with every living entity, not out of any kind of false pride or any other motivation. It is certain that a devotee who helps in this endeavor to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes indirectly a controller of the Supreme Lord. Although the Supreme Lord is full in six opulences, he does not feel transcendental bliss without his devotees. An example that may be cited in this regard is that if a very rich man does not have sons in a family, he does not feel happiness. Indeed, sometimes a rich man adopts a son to complete his happiness. The science of transcendental bliss is known to the pure devotee. Therefore, the pure devotee is always engaged in increasing the transcendental happiness of the Lord. Next verse. Ye daragara putraptam pranam vitam mimam param hitvamam sharanam yata katam tam staktum utsahe. Since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me, without any desire for material improvement in this life or in the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? So here's a very nice verse. The Lord is saying that his devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me. And that's why they're so dear. But Maharaj Ambarish, he was a king. He had a home, he had a wife, he had children, he had relatives, he had all the riches in the world. So what he means here by this is they give up any false conception of anything separate from the Lord. Doesn't mean that you have to give up the things in themselves as we sometimes imagine, in some way of somehow renouncing things, but just changing our consciousness. And that's really one of the most important themes of Srimad Bhagavatam, which this story is bringing out. And Srila Prabhupada brings that out in the purport, that you have Durvasa Muni, who was a sannyasi and famous for his austerities and his scriptural knowledge. And Maharaj Ambarish was a king. King is not, although king is considered, from a material point of view, a very great position, from a spiritual perspective, being a king is not considered a very great position. Lord Chaitanya, who was a sannyasi, when Maharaj Pratap Rudra wanted to meet with him, who was the king of Orissa, Lord Chaitanya was so adamant about it. And Maharaj Pratap Rudra was also a great devotee, but to set an example, well, for various reasons, but Lord Chaitanya absolutely refused to meet with him. So the devotees tried to say, you know, he's actually a great devotee. Lord Chaitanya said, I don't care who he is. If anyone has their title king after their name, I don't want to meet with them. He said, it's abominable. And if you suggest it again, I'll leave and never come back. Shishiradar Madan Mohan Ki Jai. So from a material perspective, being a king is not very good. In Vedic society, the idea of good is completely opposite from a modern society. The idea of good in Vedic society was to reduce material attachments and belongings and activities. A king is the person who is the most engrossed and fully surrounded by material opulence. But Krishna is saying here that my devotees, they give all these things up. Even their lives. It doesn't mean what devotees. Krishna says, my devotees give up their lives for me. If we take it literally, it would mean they would commit suicide or something. No, that's not what it means. It means that they're giving up their lives. They live only for Krishna. So we'll read Srila Prabhupada's purport. And there's an interesting point which Srila Prabhupada brings out about the difference between Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa Muni. Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped by the words Brahmanya Devaya Gobrahmanna Hitayacha. Thus he is the well-wisher of the Brahmanas. Durvasa Muni was certainly a very great Brahmana, but because he was a non-devotee, he could not sacrifice everything in devotional service. Great mystic yogis are actually self-interested. The proof is when Durvasa Muni created a demon to kill Maharaj Ambarisha, the king stayed fixed in his place, praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depending solely and wholly on him. If we remember, and for those that weren't here, Durvasa Muni created this terrible fiery demon, giant demon with this trident, who was rushing at Maharaj Ambarisha. And Maharaj Ambarisha was completely unfazed and was simply standing there with his palms folded, praying to the Lord, "If you want to kill me now, let me die now." He was not attached to his life, however he could serve. But whereas when Durvasa Muni was chased by the Sudarshana Chakra, by the supreme will of the Lord, he was so perturbed that he fled all over the world, trying to take shelter in every nook and corner of the universe. But when the Sudarshan Chakra came after Durvasa Muni, who was supposed to be completely renounced as sannyasi, he ran in fear of his life. That's the ultimate test of how much attached we are, is whether we're afraid to die, ultimately. There's one verse that Narada Muni is praying to Narayana Rishi in the fifth canto. He says that if someone has spent many years studying the scriptures but is still afraid to die, then all his study of the scriptures has been in vain, like the beating of an empty husk. So Prabhupada goes on. At last, in his fear of life, he approached Brahma, Lord Shiva, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was so interested in his own body that he wanted to kill the body of a Vaishnava. Therefore, he did not have very good intelligence. And how can an unintelligent person be delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The Lord tries to give protection to all his devotees who have given up everything for the sake of serving him. Mayi nirbadha hridaya sadava samadarshana vase kurvanti mam bhaktya satchriya satpatim yata. As chaste women bring their gentle husbands under control by service, the pure devotees who are equal to everyone and completely attached to me in the core of the heart bring me under their full control. So the Lord says here, he gives an analogy, says, as chaste women bring their husbands under the control by service, my devotees bring me completely under control by their attitude of service. And he characterizes, he mentions one quality of the sadhus here in this verse, sadhava samadarshana. This is the most important characteristic of a sadhu, samadarshana. Prabhupada will explain a little bit in the verse, in the purport. In this verse, the word samadarshanaha is significant. The pure devotee is actually equal toward everyone, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, 1854. Brahmabhuta prasanatma nasochati nakankshati samasarveshu bhuteshu. Universal brotherhood is possible when one is a pure devotee. Pandita samadarshinaha. A pure devotee is actually learned because he knows his constitutional position. He knows the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he knows the relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. Thus he has full knowledge and is automatically liberated. He can therefore see everyone on the spiritual platform. He can comprehend the happiness and distress of all living entities. He understands that what is happiness to him is also happiness to others, and what is distress to him is distressing to others. Therefore, he is sympathetic to everyone. As Prahlad Maharaj said, so chetato vimukachetasa indriyarta maya sukaya baramudvahato vimudhan. People suffer from material distress because they are not attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee's chief concern, therefore, is to raise the ignorant mass of people to a sense of Krishna consciousness. So these are the two qualities here mentioned that of the sadhu, is that they're mayi nirbadha hridaya, means within their heart, they're very firmly bound to me, within me. And they're sadhava, they're samadarshana. They are a well-wishing friend to all living entities. This is the most important quality of a sadhu, and the most important quality we should try and cultivate is how to actually treat everyone properly. Because as Krishna is saying here, he's in the heart of everyone, and his devotees are in his heart. Not just his devotees, but everyone is in the heart of Krishna. Krishna is in everyone's heart. So the sadhus, the pure devotees, they can perceive that, and they can treat everyone properly. Matsevaya pratitam te salokyari chatushtayam nechanti sevaya purnya kutonyat kala viplutam. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, although they are automatically achieved by their service. What then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to the higher planetary systems? So because of their pure devotion of not wanting anything, even liberation, Supreme Lord just becomes completely purchased by the love of it. This kind of love, this kind of pure devotion. This is a very famous verse now. Sadavo hridayam mahyam sadunam hridayam tvaham mad anyate na jananti naham tebyo managapi. Pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the pure devotees. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. Mat anyate na janati. Krishna says, I don't know anything else but them. And naham tebyo managapi. They don't know anything else but me. And then he says, managapi means not even by a tiny bit. Just not even by a tiny fraction. Even by a little fraction. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, since Durvasa Muni wanted to chastise Maharaj Ambarisha, it is to be understood that he wanted to give pain to the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since Durvasa Muni wanted to chastise Maharaj Ambarisha, it is to be understood that he wanted to give pain to the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if we ever want to give pain to any living entity, that's equivalent to causing pain to the heart of the Supreme Lord. So the Lord says, Sadavo Hridayam Mayam. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. The Lord's feelings are like those of a father who feels pain when his child is in pain. Therefore, offenses at the lotus feet of a devotee are serious. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has very strongly recommended that one not commit any offense at the lotus feet of a devotee. Such offenses are compared to a mad elephant, because when a mad elephant enters the garden, it causes devastation. Therefore, one should be extremely careful not to commit offenses to the lotus feet of a pure devotee. Actually, Maharaj Ambarisha was not at all at fault. Durvasa Muni unnecessarily wanted to chastise him on flimsy grounds. Maharaj Ambarisha wanted to complete the Ekadasi Parana as part of devotional service to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he drank a little water. But although Durvasa Muni was a great mystic Brahmana, he did not know what is what. That is the difference between a pure devotee and a so-called learned scholar of Vedic knowledge. The devotees, being always situated in the core of the Lord's heart, surely get all instructions directly from the Lord, as confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita. Tesham mevanukam partham aham ajnana jamtama nashayam yatma bhavasto jnana deepena bhashvata. Out of compassion for them, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. The devotees do not do anything not sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigneha Nabujhaya. Even the most learned or experienced person cannot understand the movements of a Vaishnava, a pure devotee. No one therefore should criticize a pure Vaishnava. A Vaishnava knows his own business. Whatever he does is precisely right, because he is always guided by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the Lord advises him, O Lord Brahmana, let me now advise you for your own protection. Please hear from me. By offending Maharaj Ambarisha, you have acted with self-envy. Therefore, you should go to him immediately, without a moment's delay. One so-called prowess when employed against the devotee certainly harms the one who employs it. Thus, it is the subject, not the object, who is harmed. For a Brahmana, austerity and learning are certainly auspicious, but when acquired by a person who is not gentle, such austerity and learning are most dangerous. O best of the Brahmanas, you should therefore go immediately to King Ambarish, the son of Maharaj Nabhaga. I wish you all good fortune. If you can satisfy Maharaj Ambarisha, then there will be peace for you. So the Lord is in the heart of the devotees. If he goes to satisfy Maharaj Ambarish, automatically the Lord is satisfied. So this is something about the relationship between the Lord and his devotees. It's so intimate that they become one in that sense. Their feelings and their desires are one. The Lord can only be offended when we offend his devotees, and the Lord can only be served when or pacified when we serve his devotees. This is something of the amazing character of the Supreme Lord. And this character is revealed most completely in the Lord's pastimes in Vrindavan. This is the month of Kartik, and we're meditating on many of Krishna's pastimes from Vrindavan. Every day we're chanting the Damodarashtakam, which is glorifying Krishna's childhood pastimes of breaking the pot of butter and stealing the butter and running away in fear and being bound up by Mother Yashoda, of crying. Rudanta muhur netra yugmam rajantam. Rudanta means he's crying. Muhur netra, and he's rubbing his eyes again and again. Karamboja with his lotus hands. Karamboja yugmena satanka netram. So Queen Kunti, she prays to Krishna in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam in her prayers. Gopyada de tvayi kutagasi dhamatavan yate dashashukali lanjana sambramaksham vakcham naniya bhava bhaivanaya astitasya samam vimoheti bhirapi yadviveti. She's praying to the Lord that when the gopi, Mother Yashoda, took up the stick to chastise you, you began to cry, and the tears smeared the kajal, the eye makeup on your eyes, and you began to you became very afraid. You were crying in fear, even though fear personified is afraid of you. In the Vedic scriptures, it's described that fear personified in the Upanishads, out of fear of the Supreme Lord, the wind is blowing, out of fear of the Supreme Lord, and ultimately, even fear personified is afraid of the Supreme Lord. But Queen Kunti is saying, even though fear personified is afraid of you, you're afraid of Mother Yashoda. And the Acharyas have commented and discussed this verse because Queen Kunti is saying, and I'm bewildered because of this. And what that means, when she's saying I'm bewildered, is that Krishna is actually afraid. If Krishna wasn't actually afraid, sometimes you might think, oh, Krishna's not really afraid, he's just pretending, right? He's God, and he sort of... If he wasn't actually afraid, then there would be nothing bewildering about it, because that's easy to understand, right? That he's God, and he just maybe does these things. He's just pretending or something in some way. But no, he's actually afraid. That's what's bewildering about it. There's nothing bewildering if he's not actually afraid. But Krishna is actually afraid of Mother Yashoda. Krishna is actually controlled by the love of his devotees in so many different ways. He's actually... he's actually offended when we offend the living entities. He's actually hurt by that. He's actually becomes indebted to love his devotees. He wants to surrender to the gopis of Vrindavan, to his parents. He becomes indebted to their love. He becomes controlled by the love, actually. So there are so many wonderful pastimes in Vrindavan where Krishna displays his incredible loving relationships with his devotees. And this time of year, we're meditating, of course, on the Damodar Lila, where Krishna is bound by Mother Yashoda. We have the Govardhan Lila, which we celebrated just recently, where Krishna lifted up the Govardhan Hill and exchanged so many wonderful pastimes with his devotees. We have the Rasa Lila, the Sharad Purnima Rasa Lila, which was earlier at the beginning of the Kartik month. And today, there's a very special Lila also. We have a very special darshan, courtesy of Brajakishori Devi and other pujaris who have dressed the deity so wonderfully. So we have Srimati Radharani is dressed as a cowherd boy today, for those that may not have noticed. She's wearing a turban, she has a flute and a bugle, and her lotus feet are showing. Actually, this is traditionally in Vrindavan, this is the only day where Srimati Radharani's feet are showing. We have darshan of her feet. So today is Gopashtami, and Gopashtami is the day when Krishna goes to herd the cows. When he was a young child, very young boy, like if you go to Vrindavan, the villages, sometimes you'll see very young children walking with cows, 3-4 years old, and sometimes So Krishna, he was from a very young age, he was tending the calves. And Nanda Maharaj and the other adults were tending the cows. And this is a very, you know, in Vrindavan, it's a, the whole culture is, they're Vaishyas, the whole culture is based around cow protection. So this is, you know, very important day. This is like Krishna is becoming, you know, a man now. He's taking care of the cows. This is, he's growing up. So this was a very, this celebration was celebrated in very grand fashion in Vrindavan. It was, of course, there was a lot of different, you know, elements to it. Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj, they didn't really want Krishna to do it. For one thing, they felt he was still too young. And of course, parents, they don't like to see their kids grow up. They want them to remain young. And they were very attached to Krishna that way. But Krishna was very eager. And he made a, you know, he told his father that, you know, it's not, you know, you have sons now. It's not proper for, you know, we want to do that service for you. Please let us do that. We want to serve you in that way. You know, you're old now. You shouldn't have to work. You can retire. We can take care of the cows now. So there was a very, it was a 3-day long ceremony where, you know, there are many brahmanas and yajnas and Vedic chanting and charity and so many different festivities and drums and trumpets. And all the gopis, they also wanted to participate. They wanted to join in the festivities and they wanted to go out to them. So they all dressed up. That's why we dress up. Radharani is, because all the gopis of Vrindavan, the young gopis, they dressed up like coward boys so they could also participate in all the festivities. So this is a very wonderful day to meditate. I thought we'd just read a few verses from Srimad Bhagavatam about Krishna. This is from the 10th canto, 15th chapter. So this is describing how, just one verse describes this day and then a little bit about Krishna in the forests of Vrindavan. Shri Suka Uvacham Tachapau Gandavaya Shitau Vraje Bhavuvatastau Pushupala Sammatau Gascharayantau Sakivi Samampadai Vrindavanam Punyam Mati Vachakratu. Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, when Lord Rama and Lord Krishna attained the age of Pauganda while living in Vrindavan, the cowherd men allowed them to take up the task of tending cows. Engaging thus in the company of their friends, the two boys rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting upon it the marks of their lotus feet. And Srila Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur, he comments that previously when Krishna was very young, because this verse here says that they rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting upon it the marks of their lotus feet. So on Krishna's lotus feet, there's all different marks, 21 marks. But when they're little children, you know, the lines on their feet were not very well developed, so you couldn't quite see them. But now, once they got to this age, all the marks were visible on their feet as they made their imprints in Vrindavan. So this is a very special scene. Krishna going to the into the forest with all the cows. Tan madhavo venu mudira yanvrito gopar ganadibhi suyashobalanvita pashun puraskritya pashavyam avishat bihartu kama kusumakaram varam. It's described here this way. Thus desiring to enjoy pastimes, Lord Madhava, sounding his flute, surrounded by cowherd boys who were chanting his glories, accompanied by Lord Baladev, kept the cows before him, and entering Vrindavana forest, which was full of flowers and rich with nourishment for the animals. Tanmanjugo shali migadvijakulam mahanmana prakyapaya saraswata patena jishtam shatapacha gandina nidikshadantum bhagavan manodade. Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over that forest, which resounded with charming sounds of bees, animals, and birds, in which was enhanced by a lake whose clear water resembled the minds of great souls, and by a breeze carrying the fragrance of 100-petaled lotuses. Seeing all this, Lord Krishna decided to enjoy the auspicious atmosphere. Satachatatarunapallavasriya phala prasunodu barena padayo sprasakchikan viksha vanaspatin muda smayannivagrajam adi purushaha. The primeval lord saw that the stately trees with their beautiful reddish buds and their heavy burden of fruits and flowers, were bending down to touch his feet with the tips of their branches. So it goes on to describe, this chapter is actually called The Killing of Denuka, the Ass Demon. So in Krishna's Palganda Lila, he displayed many pastimes, especially killing many demons with his childhood friends. So in this world, little boys like to run around and they play fight. But in the spiritual world, they get to fight real demons and stuff that kids just make up stories about giant monsters and like these little boys do. They actually do all these things running around the forest of Vrindavan. And also around this time is when the gopis begin to become attracted to Krishna. That's called Purvarag, means the beginning of attachment. That the gopis are seeing Krishna go out to the forest every day. And this is one verse which is describing this scene, which we chant every day at our programs. Famous verse. Badha pidam natavara vapu karnayo karnikadam vibhradvasa kanaka kapisham vaijayantim chamalam randhan javenu adhara shudayapurayan gopavinda vrindavanam suparamanam pravishada gita kirti. Verse very beautifully describes the scene as Krishna's going out with all the cows and the coward boys, or Krishna's playing his flute. The coward boys are singing his glories as he's entering into the forest of Vrindavan. So we have so many wonderful pastimes to meditate upon about how Krishna and his special relationships with the devotees, and how this knowledge or this his relationships with his devotees, this is really the most confidential knowledge. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives the most confidential knowledge. He explains about his relationship with his devotees. He says, Maite teshu chapyaham, that my devotees are in me and I am also in them. And this is fully revealed in the pastimes of Vrindavan. And we have a wonderful opportunity. Now is the month of Kartik, a little while longer to meditate on Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. We'll be chanting Dhammadharastikam tonight, and we always have the Srimad Bhagavatam. We can always read from that every day at home to keep reminding ourselves and to actually enter into how wonderful this knowledge is. Just recently I came across this quote by Isaac Newton, who was, if not the greatest, definitely one of the greatest scientists of all time, but you could arguably make a case for being the greatest scientist of all time. But he was also a very religious and very spiritual person. And he said, I don't know what I may seem to other people, because people obviously thought he was very great. He said, I don't know what I may seem to other people. He wrote this in a letter to a friend. He said, but to myself, I seem like a foolish child, merely playing on the beach with a few pebbles, some shiny stones, finding one that's smoother, one that's shaped funny. He said, well, the great ocean of truth lie before me. And this is very... I was struck by a few things, but one thing is that in the Brahma Samhita, Krishna is described as the ocean of truth. Tastava Veda Sarena Stochanana Keshvam. The line before that, I'm not remembering, it says Tattvasagara. It says Brahma became, after he performed his meditation in devotion, it says he became well acquainted with the ocean of truth. So we have this process. Here is Isaac Newton, the greatest material scientist. But even at the pinnacle of material learning, you still cannot even get a glimpse into the actual ocean of truth. But we have this wonderful process of Krishna consciousness, this simple process. We have all the information, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, where we can become actually well acquainted with the ocean of truth. We can enter into all the mysteries of the Supreme Lord and his unlimited pastimes. All we have to do is simply take advantage of all the wonderful gifts that Srila Prabhupada has given us through the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, through this wonderful program of temple deity worship, through all his books, and make our life perfect. Hare Krishna. So I think we're just about ready, or probably past ready, for RT. So thank you for your kind attention, and I guess we can put the books up. And do you normally stand up, or we sit for a dhamma? So we'll form a line. So Hare Krishna.